Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. We're back after a bit of a international break, I suppose. I mean, again, it's quite an interesting time. This is the most interesting time of the year for those. Hopefully, you know, been enjoying your international break. Maybe as unpleasant as it was to follow a Canada game during that time because the men's national team had a window to forget, there's still been some great football in Europe, South America, Africa, Asia, but everywhere across the world, of course, as usual. Meanwhile, over in Canada, we've still, of course, had the domestic game roll on, CPL playoffs, which we'll dive into. It's been a fun start to those. Heck, even South Border, NWSL had a fun end of the season, chaotic end. Everything came down to decision day. I think so many, like four or five of the playoff spots were still up for grabs. So that was fun. But in the end of the day, over here in Vancouver, MLS is back this weekend. It's decision day in MLS. Vancouver Whitecaps, LAFC, quite the game. And we're going to dive into that. But before we do, I'm your co-host, Alexander Gungaruzic, joined as always by Sammy Rowan. And I mean, certainly, again, interesting times this time of year with between all the international footy, between all the playoffs. It's such a unique contrast of everywhere you look, there's something big going on.
It's just the fall, autumn, if you're on this side of the pond. It is a great time of the year for sports. There's so much going on. On a football show, I'll give a massive shout out to the Rugby World Cup, which has been tremendous. Had some fun diving into that on the international break. As you mentioned, Canadian Premier League, enthralling playoff matchups so far. Lots to dive into there. Weird timing as always. MLS has a habit of these international breaks. And then with the addition of League's Cup this season, really fitting in at terrible times of the season in terms of the momentum of the league. But alas, we start again and decision day is going to be a big one. So looking forward to that. So we'll look back a little bit on Seattle and St. Louis, kind of bring up some talking points that help us transition towards LAFC and the playoffs. There's going to be a home playoff match of some variety at BC Place, which is tremendous. Very much looking forward to that. So got to give the Vancouver Whitecaps their due and kind of dive into all the little intricacies that could play into to playoff football when it arrives in Vancouver. So. As always, Alex, very much looking forward to diving into the show, talking CPL, talking MLS. And thanks everyone for being back listening as always. This is always fun.
No, for sure. It's, we'll spare the MLS schedule makers this week because they've absorbed a lot of our grief. But it is quite hilarious that it was such an exciting week, that week of like DC at home. You clinch in midweek against St. Louis. There's some good games. You go to Seattle. It's a big weekend. And then it's just like, just completely fallen off a cliff. But then at the same time, it's also like ironic because RSL played a huge game during the international break and no one really noticed. It was kind of like, got some FUTMOB notifications. You're like, oh yeah, like RSL and LA Galaxy are playing and it's a 2-2 draw on a Wednesday in the middle of an international break. Like, hey guys. And I mean, even then, I guess like Miami played didn't Miami play last week or someone played also on the weekend. It was just like so strange. It's like, guys, what are we doing here? But in the end, at least it's decision day is back. And for everyone except DC United, like also like shout out to DC United being in a playoff spot, but because they've played 34 games, they're mathematically guaranteed a falling out and their season was over 2 weeks early. So they just, Wayne Rooney left and he's already coaching in Birmingham City now. And it was just like, what is going on here? But decision day is here. It's nice, at least in the Western Conference, to see 33 games played across the board. So everyone heading into this final match day, there's no DC United situations where you have an idle team just sitting there and watching. But yeah, for the Whitecaps, exciting because heading into this LAFC game, they've got all to play for. And from in their last two games is a big reason why. I mean, the start, there was a St. Louis game. They host the Western Conference leaders. Two BC plays for the first time. Good showing of St. Louis fans, it must be said. Thought that was interesting to see them travel, follow their team. That interest, it was, you know, the crowd itself was a bit low, a midweek game. Reaching, you know, October, I guess, as it is at that stage, it's always going to be tough. Although, you know, it sounds like for this upcoming LAFC game, the crowd's going to be very good for the Whitecaps. And I have to imagine a playoff game will do very well, given that it's been so long since there has been a home playoff game. I guess 2017, it would be off the top of my head. So seeing how Canadian Championship Finals, how decision days have done over the last few years, it should be a great game that they're hosting one now. But this midweek game, a bit quiet. And then they head over to Seattle and grab a 0-0 draw, which ultimately I'd say you face two of the top teams in the West, one away, one at home. You emerge with 4 points. That's the blueprint. That's pretty much as perfect as you could draw it out. Of course, you would like six, but I always say a win at home, get points on the road. And overall, I think it was a good two-game stint. So, I mean, I guess, Sam, just to start, what were your kind of overall takeaways from, okay, you know, it is tough that they had to travel down to Seattle on such short notice, but they overall managed both scenarios quite well.
Absolutely, I agree with that. I mean, you have two difficult matchups in different senses. The first one is, you know, it's at home where you need to be on the front foot. You need to maximize points. And you're doing it against a good St. Louis side, but also a side that's already preparing for the playoffs. They don't field their top lineup. That has banana peel written all over it, right? Where all of a sudden you do some unnecessary mental gymnastics, and now you switch off and you allow a couple cheap goals. And now St. Louis's B team is beating you 2-0 at home, right? Like, you can see how certainly Whitecaps teams of the past would have fallen into that trap. And yet they didn't in this match. I think an underlying theme from these two matches is two clean sheets in a row. That cannot be undersold. That's absolutely massive. It's the right time of year to find some defensive form. If you're the Vancouver Whitecaps, for Yohei Takaoka to look more comfortable again. And then Seattle's almost the flip side, where the expectations are low. You're going into a place you haven't won since, is it 2016, I think, the last time they were able to secure all 3 points in Seattle. So this is a gargantuan task for any Whitecaps team. And to me, in that matchup, they played the prototypical road game. They had a good game plan. They didn't really, yes, Seattle had the balance of play, I would say, overall, but they didn't allow a lot of high-quality scoring chances. And then Vancouver had two reasonably good opportunities. You had that Sam Adekubi ball into the box that found the foot of Ryan Gauld. Gauld hits the outside of the post. And then you have Richie Larea into the box to Junior Hoilett, who unfortunately scuffed the chance. But in a road match in a hostile environment, you have those two looks. On the right day, you hope one of them goes in and you smash and grab a 1-0. If not, you take your single point and you move on. So the approach in both those matches, I thought, was a good one, was the right one. They executed on things that could have easily tripped them up, and they were able to avoid those pitfalls, those potential risks at a time in the season where, you know, falling into a trap can be incredibly costly, right? Like the Whitecaps, if they only got a point at home, if they dropped points in Seattle, all of a sudden you're looking at 7th, 8th in the West. You have to play a play-in game. It gets way more complicated. And they put themselves in a good position now where they still have a chance at the top four. I feel like we've been talking top four since mid-season. It's still on the table. And even I think your worst-case scenario is not a terrible one, albeit, you know, obviously you want to maximize and get yourself as far up the table as you can, but, you know, home against a team that, yes, while already qualified, still has a lot to play for. But I think home with the opportunity to not control your fate with a win, but certainly improve your lot, improve your chances, which we'll talk about a little bit later on the show. That's all you can really ask for. So yeah, mission accomplished, I think, in the big picture from the last two matches. I think you have to walk away pretty pleased with that.
No, for sure. I think overall, I think for me, the St. Louis game was very impressive. Yes, you can say they rotated, but there's still a good St. Louis side. They still start a lot of regulars like Adoniran up front. He's been in great form. Lowen in midfield. He started Joachini as well. There's a few names like, yeah, okay, they're missing a Klaus. They rested Berkey for one of the first times all season, et cetera. But it's still a good lineup as well. So I think the St. Louis game was very impressive just because it was it could have easily been a high pressure, you win and you clinch kind of game. In the Whitecaps, sometimes they can get a bit, just overwhelmed by those sorts of games, it feels. And I think the fact that it was such a dominant performance, and especially for me, it was how they managed the game. They started phenomenally. They didn't score their opening goal till minute 58. But, earlier in the season, maybe they have a game like that. They struggle. They don't score. And then it just doubt creeps in. And then maybe St. Louis gets one and it's over. They just held on like, we're not going to give St. Louis anything.
And that's as we've pointed out in this show, that has not been Vancouver's style. The problem is if they don't get on you early, it tends to be a problem. Like, this is a team that scores early and then often, even so, gives away that. So I think the maturity to play this one into the second half at home and just kind of continue doing your thing, not panic. And then the onslaught kind of came when they were able to finally break through.
Yeah, well, I think to Sam's point, I think we checked about a few weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, this win is one of the first they've had all year where they didn't score within the first 30 or something, something like that, where they basically every time they've won, it seems like they score early and then they just maybe build up a bit of a lead and they just fight till the end. Or, earlier in the year when they're having those clean sheets, they'd score early and just, hold on a clean sheet. So it was nice just because it was one where they didn't score early. And instead of allowing some of those back-breaking goals that have cost them, goals where they have all the momentum, they literally were genuinely the Whitecaps were the better team in the St. Louis game for probably 80 to 85 minutes. Like, that's impressive. Like, it was high press. It was put the pressure up. And it's huge because it might be a small thing, but with this win, then they were able to draw in Seattle. They've now booked top six. Of course, that means a guaranteed home game with the new format. Of course, that keeps top four alive. But that's also little things such as, if you finish seventh, you would have to play the second team in the West. So at least they're avoiding the top two teams in the West in the first round, guaranteed. And even at this at this point, depending on where they finish, like, it could be a more favorable path through the playoffs. And those are all little things that end up helping. Of course, avoiding the play in that one chance of, now you're guaranteed the best of three. That's at least two games. And if you can manage your player cards right, that's three. Overall, I think I was really impressed with the St. Louis game just because it felt like one they needed, especially at home where they kind of struggled as of late. And you see this DC United where overall it was a good performance, but it was just sloppy errors. You go up a goal, you let one in. You go up a goal, you let one in. Like, you just didn't really take control of this game. I just like the ruthlessness for them to be like, all right, let's win this game. Let's take care of business and let's move on to Seattle. And that set the table nicely for Seattle where, yeah, it was. I would agree that it was a good road performance. I think that's something you want in the playoffs, for example, especially with this new format. I think if I'm not mistaken, in the best of three, there's no extra time, straight to penalties. If you win on penalties, it counts as a win because it's first to two wins. This would be a huge game in Seattle. Imagine you play like that, you get a nil-nil, you go and win on penalties. You're laughing. That's great for the format, especially for the team like the Whitecaps who've been inconsistent on the road all year long, even though they've found their feet a bit lately. Those sorts of results, that's no small thing. So, yeah, I think that St. Louis one kind of set up nicely what ended up happening on the weekend.
Okay, so I'm just going to – I mean, that's kind of a word on the general themes over those two matches. We'll dive into some more, like, individual player stuff, but the one thing we were chatting about before the show and I've sort of called out in some of my written work was just a little bit of confusion about the deployment of the midfield throughout those matches. And now, again, we just heaped praise on a solid road performance, a dominant home win. So you have to take this with a grain of salt. Like, these aren't catastrophic issues, but simply put, I was a bit curious and confused by the decision to play Alessandro Schopf at home against St. Louis a match where you'd think front foot attacking, take control of the match football, and then playing Pedro Vite on the road in Seattle, where you'd think you're playing a little bit more in structure, behind the ball, conservative. To me, based on the profile of those players, you would have sort of thought it would be the other way around. So I think that was just one that was interesting. I mean, then you can also talk maybe a little bit about, you know, the decision to start Junior Hoilett in the match in Seattle. I thought Hoilett was fine, but I just tactically, I don't know how well that worked, especially like 25 minutes in. It felt like Seattle made some adjustments, and all of a sudden some of the attacking stuff that was working for the Whitecaps in the opening phases just dried up completely. So that would be like the one tactical point, I think, over the last two matches, where for the most part, I thought Vinny Sartini really got things right, and they were good game plans. But that's just one area where I guess I had some questions. Alex, we haven't actually chatted about this, so curious for your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's funny. Cavs really know what they are at this stage of the year, which hasn't been the case. Like, it feels like this is about as tactically stable as we've seen the Whitecaps under Vanni Sartini. Like, there hasn't been in experimentation for months in terms of the formation.
Tactical stability under Vanni Sartini is definitely a relative term, but yes, I agree.
Yeah, and there's been stability as well in terms of players playing certain positions. Like, Gold's kind of just stuck in there as the second striker since August. He's really thriving in this role. You know who the wingbacks are. You know who the midfielders are. Like, really, the only one who has shifted positions has kind of been Vite having to bounce between that Gold position in the midfield. I'm trying to think of anyone else who is Berhalter sometimes having to fill in a wingback if needed. Other than that, it's been relatively stable. I think the funnily enough, the only thing Vanni Sartini hasn't quite figured out is that midfield balance. And I think it continues to show that, you know, there's the tinkering. And I mean, to be fair, I don't think the Andrés Cubas injury in midweek against St. Louis helped. Of course, we'll hope to hear some good news ahead of this LAFC game. From what it sounds like, it was a shoulder injury. So we'll see how Cubas recovers. You never know. Sometimes you get a shoulder injury, it's months. Sometimes it's days. I'd have to imagine, given this time of the year, maybe we see him in a short stint against LAFC, and then he's good to go for the playoffs. But certainly the midfield balance continues to remain a question mark after Cubas and, I guess, Berhalter, who will either fill in for Cubas if need be, or sometimes slot in alongside him. And yeah, I was just surprised to. I agree. I'm surprised to see Schopf on the road, surprised to see, was it Schopf? Yeah, Schopf at home. Given that what we've seen, he kind of brings what you want on the road, where he can slow the game down. He can, you know, control the pace of a game, which, you know, yes, relatively speaking, that pace that he controls it at is slower. That's not bad on the road. Sometimes you need to slow the game down on the road, and you don't want to be trading on the road. Like, you're not going to Seattle away and you want to trade. No, you don't. You're like, you're not going to want to let Jordan Morris, you know, the roll down brothers, Ladero.
To use your boxing analogy from the last couple episodes, you don't come out on the road and start throwing haymakers in the first round. You're going to sit back like a Floyd Mayweather and just kind of wait for your right moment to strike. And Schopf feels like the more patient approached style of midfielder.
And yeah, and I'd agree, because against St. Louis, Vancouver wasn't having that issue, say, like pushing forward, just because they have so much of the ball and their high press was phenomenal, it must be said. But it's kind of telling that they were able to fashion up such a late push after Schopf had come off that, you know, I think Schopf came off at 1-0, and it was just after that, it was relentless. Because even, I guess, if you look at the first goal that White scores, I mean, it didn't really come from anything in the midfield. It was a long ball, just White timed his run perfectly, great composure to finish. And I think it's also telling in the second half against Seattle, you maybe bring on a Schopf to try and grab control of the game. And he just kept, he struggled to maintain Seattle's pace, and he struggled to push the ball forward, which is maybe what you would have, maybe if Schopf had come in from the start, he was able to slow things down. And then later, when the game kind of picks up, especially as a Seattle starting to push for a goal, you bring in maybe a Vite or an Ahmed and just completely, you know, let the reins loose in the last 20-30 minutes. So yeah, I think it's interesting because like we mentioned, there's no perfect balance, but it certainly feels like Schopf is the more and more we see him, it feels like he's bringing better benefit as a road starter, and then maybe someone who can come off the bench at home and maybe slow down a game at home where you can have that control, you can take that pressure. Whereas the last week, it felt like he was used as a starter at home and it maybe slowed down the pace of the game a bit at times at home where you want to go full throttle, like the Whitecaps mostly did in their press, but you would have liked to see that on the ball. And then you go to Seattle where maybe you would have liked Schopf to be there to keep the pace of the game a little slower and then bring on one of your other options. So it was just, yeah, I think that's something where we'll be interested to see how he's deployed. Because I think if you're talking a best of three where either the Whitecaps will start at home and then travel away and then come back home, or if they start away, travel home, go away, it's something to monitor. Because I think those Schopf splits could end up being key in a scenario like that. We're going to have a short turnaround and et cetera.
Just a couple things to add. According to our esteemed colleague, hard journalist from Today at Training, Andres Kubas was a full participant. And Ryan Gauld apparently had a bit of a moment where his left foot was giving him some problems again, but he spoke to the media, or PAR more precisely, after training and said that he's good to go for this weekend. So Gauld, injury scare avoided, Kubas fully participating. Now, does that mean he starts? I think, like you, Alex, maybe a 30-40 minute sort of prove it, get ready for playoffs stint is more likely than a 65-70 minutes, but we'll see how it goes. So that those are interesting things to note for this weekend. Anything to add there, Alex? Or do we want to, I mean, for me, I guess I just wanted to shout out a couple of individual players from the last couple matches. We already mentioned Takaoka. I mean, shout out to him for, seems like he's got the shot stopping bug back a little bit, which is nice to see at the right time of year. Not forced to make a ton of saves, but some pretty crucial ones when it mattered. Especially that was, 96 minute against Seattle, where he's able to dive down to the near post and push that Christian Roldan shot away. That would have been two matches in a row for Roldan where he scored a last gasp winner. Would have been crazy if he didn't manage to pull that off, but thankfully for Vancouver, it didn't happen. The other two, I guess I wanted to give a little bit of credit, is Richie Larea and Sam Adekubi. Obviously, didn't have a ton of success with Canada over in Japan. That being said, I feel like Richie's gradually been growing into his role at the team, creating some good chances, got involved. Yes, it's a bit of a garbage time goal, but he opens his Whitecaps account against Seattle. And then he's the foot responsible for setting up probably Vancouver's best chance against Seattle away. And then with Sam Adekubi, I thought it was a really positive performance in Seattle. I think the playing behind the ball, patient, slow build-up approach that we talked about previously really suited Sam in Seattle. And especially in the first, the opening stages where, kind of throughout Sam's performance, I thought there were a number of moments where it looked like he was, a little more dialed in. We've seen Sam really excel with the Canadian men's national team. He's getting involved in that intricate link-up play and, kind of acts like a midfielder. I feel like we just saw a little bit more of that in Seattle. So I'm encouraged that after his knee issues, he's building back up to form. And with Richie, I think just kind of opening the account could do him a lot of good. So, shout out to those two guys. I feel like there's been some chatter since those two have joined, and it's kind of like, where are the contributions? Why aren't we seeing more from these guys? And I would kind of tell you to be a little bit patient. I think it's trending at the right time for these two.
Yeah. And I mean, for Larea, I think the goal was huge. You could see the confidence lift it maybe just gave him, that because he'd been getting the right areas. For him, it felt more like it's just that end product. Like you're thriving as a wingback, you're getting into runs, you're even getting in the box, winning penalties. But it's like when you cut in and shoot, when you go to the pylon and cross, it just feels like it's always been an inch or two off. And to see him cut in on his left and hit a shot like that, it was he was like, okay, that's, you know, that's what you want. And hopefully that can give him the confidence to do that more often. So that was good, because for him, it just felt like confidence in the final action. And then as for Adekugbu, was encouraging to see him get up and more into those sorts of positions, while also, like you mentioned, combining, playing deeper. I'll be interested to see how they fare after the international break. For what it's worth, it was probably a pretty good scenario for both. Adekugbu didn't see the field, but maybe that's not the worst thing, given, you know, he's getting back up to full speed. Larea played a good chunk against Japan from the start. You know, wasn't the greatest game for Canada. So from a form momentum point, maybe you know, it's not the dominant performance from a Larea that you would have liked confidence wise, but he got minutes under his belt. You know, playing with your national team always can be a confidence boost that, you know, you're still relied on to start with, you know, with someone like Alphonso Davies on the other flank with you. So yeah, I think for those two, good to see the progress. I think, I mean, ultimately you bring them in for playoffs, so these are the sorts of games where you're going to really want to see a lot more from them. And this was encouraging, and I'm excited to see what LAFC and beyond brings. As for Takoka, I just wanted to shout out the clutchness of his saves, because I think another big thing too is like the RSL goal a few weeks ago on the free kick. It's just, it was terrible timing for a goal like that. Like sometimes it happens, but it was just like you're up 1-0, you're on the road, and you just allow a backbreaker and you pretty much lose the game off the back of that. It feels like, I think of this game, or sorry, in this time, Aziel Jackson had a phenomenal chance for St. Louis. I think it was still 0-0 at the time in the St. Louis game. Takoka made a huge save. If they allow that, feels like St. Louis could have got a lot of momentum, subbed on some of their main defenders and locked out a win. Takoka saves the Caps. It keeps them in the game. They score the first goal. They end up winning. I'd like that aspect of it. And then, like you mentioned, in Seattle, there are just several occasions where he saved the road point. And especially if the Whitecaps had been able to grab a wiener, it would have been even better to reflect upon Takoka's performance. So in terms of Takoka, I mean, we felt like I pondered if fatigue maybe was an issue. So maybe this international break will be exactly what the doctor ordered for him. Maybe even as well, just the fact that he had a bit of an uptick with there being less travel can only help. But I just like the clutchness of his saves, because not only had he been struggling, but he'd been giving up some goals at bad times. And that's always the worst thing as a goalkeeper, just because it's one thing to make a mistake, but it's another to make a costly mistake at a bad time. So I think that was a good redemption, just to see him arguably save a few points for the Whitecaps across this stretch, because that's what you want from your goalkeeper. And that's what you need in the playoffs when you're, you know, 0-0 at home and the other team gets a great chance. You can't give up a weak goal, because that will be a momentum sapper. And ditto on the road, where, say, you know, again, especially in the best of three, where you maybe trying to grit out some penalties, right? If he makes a good save and helps you get there, you're not going to complain at all.
Absolutely. Okay, the last kind of talking point for the last two matchups, and this can transition us into some LAFC decision day preview. A question I've been batting around a little bit is, who is your third center back come playoff time? Is it Jermaine Brown or is it Matias Laborda? Because this is another area, I guess, if we're going to go beyond the midfield, and this is less tactical, I guess, and more just plug and play, who fits better in that role? But who at the moment do you have more confidence in heading into playoff matchups? I mean, maybe it's something where Vanny continues to roll back and forth between them. But I guess to me, if you had to get my gut instinct at the moment, strangely enough, I think I back Jermaine Brown's consistency over Matias Laborda, which feels like a very dangerous statement to put out on record. But really, since Jermaine came back from his last stint with Jamaica, I feel like he's been in some of his better white form in a white cap shirt. He's had some really nice defensive showings, even when the record has been up and down in that department. So yeah, I just think that's something to monitor, depending on who starts against LAFC and then heading into playoffs, is who does Vanni Sartini trust to be that third in the back three?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I would agree that it feels like Jermaine Brown's found a bit of stability as of late. I mean, he was very good against, it was DC, right? Where he had a very good performance.
What I found very interesting from Jermaine, he did play, or was that Matisse Laborde against DC? They keep going back and forth. I think it was, if I'm recalling correctly, when Jermaine played against St.
Louis. It was DC.
So he played Jermaine against started DC, and he played against St. Louis as well.
St. Louis.
And I thought that those two performances, so first of all, his work on Benteke against DC, even though they conceded two cheap goals, it really wasn't on Jermaine. And then I thought against St. Louis, it was one of the first times in a long time where Jermaine had a defensive performance that wasn't amazing and it wasn't terrible. It was just sort of rock solid and reasonably uneventful. And that kind of got the golf clap for me, because I feel like that's a sign of maturity. And really both of these guys, Laborda and Jermaine, they've been sort of known, at least in a Whitecap shirt, as high event defenders, right? Like they're either on it or it's very dicey. And from both of them recently, I feel like I've seen lower event showings that have coincided with decent Whitecaps defensive performances. So I feel like that's encouraging going into playoff time. You know, obviously you need your core of Takaoka and Ranko Veselinovic to play really well come playoffs, but you're also going to need some nice depth, complementary roles. And if, whether it's Laborda or Brown, if they can just avoid the calamitous moments, that is a job well done. Cause really they are solid defenders who have just been mired by inconsistency. So if they can just ratchet that down a little bit, eliminate a little bit of that volatility from their games, I think it'll serve the Whitecaps well come playoff time. Again, yeah, Brown at the moment maybe has a slight edge for me, but will depend on how things go decision day.
Yeah, it's been interesting because I would agree that Trevane has found that consistency, and something maybe Laborda, he's a bit of an interesting one because he seemed to have some of the like just better performances. Like when he's on, it's like, okay, this is why you signed him. And then, like you mentioned, the inconsistency of just a mix of sloppiness, a mix of maybe not fitting that right center back role. As we mentioned in the past, maybe he's better suited to play in the middle, but as we know, that's not going to change at this point of the season. So you're just going to have to, you know, we're of course going to have to hope that the Whitecaps continue to, that the stretch of being a little tighter defensively on crosses and keeping clean sheets going into the playoffs. But yeah, you can argue that Jermaine Brown has the edge now. But on the flip side, what I'll say is I also could be intrigued. Jermaine Brown's also had some really good performances on the road as well lately. So I wonder if it could be something where Jermaine starts the road and Laborda kind of starts at home, where you want Laborda a bit more on that front foot, being aggressive at home, where you want to play that way, whereas maybe Jermaine's lower event last few weeks where he's been, you know, quieting down his game could be useful on the road, where you need that sort of game, like him in a shop, for example, start on the road in the 3-5-2, but then at home it's, you go Laborda, you go, you know, Vite, Ahmed, and you go a little more front heavy. So I wonder if that could also end up being the approach as well. I mean, we'll see if Vanny ends up going for that, and this weekend will be telling. Although I guess Jamaica having games might also affect, you know, his ability to start this weekend, but again, it's at home, so it would make more sense logically maybe for a Laborda to start and see how he fares. So I also wonder if maybe that could end up being the approach again, if that's also why you rotate your squad throughout the season, to figure out which players are better at home, which players are better away. I never really thought about it like that, but actually it was funny enough, a CPL coach mentioned that to me recently, that that's something that, you know, their team looks to do, is over the course of a season, figure out who does better at home, who does better away. So it could be something where that's where that sort of intel really pays off for guys on the Whitecaps, like a Shop versus, you know, Vite versus Ahmed, and then at the back and then Brown versus Laborda debate, to consider factors like that. Because especially in the playoffs, and the playoffs is pretty, you know, it's going to be pretty congested early on, you know, with the best of three. So those sorts of factors could pay off.
Yeah, it's a bit cliched as well, but, you know, some players might feed off a home crowd. Some players might feed off the jeering, the, you know, the hostile environment. There's a mentality thing at play there too. And it's also obviously dependent a little bit. We don't know yet because we need to do decision day, but who the Vancouver Whitecaps are playing in the playoffs, what kind of attacking weapons they have, what threats they possess could certainly have a big impact on who's that third center back. So no definitive answers yet, but I think an interesting question. Speaking of questions yet to be answered, there's a lot that needs to be answered on decision day. The Whitecaps very much a part of that. As we mentioned, top four, still a possibility. And here's the lowdown on decision day. Outside of the Whitecaps playing LAFC, you have Houston against Portland at Providence Park. You have Real Salt Lake. Is that home or away to Colorado? You need to
away
confirm that. So that's at DSG, so RSL at Dick's Sporting Goods against Colorado, and then Seattle away as well to St. Louis, correct?
Yes, Seattle's away to St. Louis.
So all three of those right around the Vancouver Whitecaps in the standings, they're all on the road. Obviously, I think if you look at those three matchups, you probably circle RSL Colorado is the one that you're least confident in the result going Vancouver's way, because Colorado's obviously had a historically bad year, high levels of dysfunction there. But hey, decision day, trying to prove things, trying to earn contracts for next season. Those can always be, I talked about banana peels earlier on in the episode. That certainly could be one for Real Salt Lake. They've been playing more recently. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? We'll have to see. But then you look at Houston, Portland, Seattle, St. Louis. Those are both challenges. Alex, you mentioned before the show, Portland been in really good form recently. That new coach, interim coach bump, serving them well. And then St. Louis probably looking for a big, rousing home performance to vault them into the playoffs. So that'll be an interesting one with Seattle. And then in terms of the permutations themselves, the Whitecaps need two of three results to go their way. So if two of those three teams lose and the Whitecaps win, they'll secure one of those top four spots. They can only pass Seattle if Seattle loses on decision day, because Seattle's obviously got that little extra buffer. And then, Alex, kick it to you for this last one, but I believe there's some permutations with Houston and RSL too, where they maybe don't need an outright loss for the Whitecaps window to still be open for that top four in some respects.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And to the Seattle point, the Whitecaps would tie them for wins. And I think if I'm not mistaken, the next tiebreaker would be goal differential, which the Whitecaps would guarantee to have better just because Seattle, they're currently tied. So Seattle losing and Vancouver winning would automatically swing it by two. But yeah, so basically, like you mentioned, two of the three results need to go the Whitecaps way to finish top four. The results are either a Seattle loss, and of course, each scenario, the Whitecaps do need to win. Just because if they draw, they can pass RSL, but that's not going to be enough to pass Houston, who has the wins tiebreaker on them. So the highest they could finish with the draw is fifth. So they need to win against LAFC, who we have to remember, if LAFC they have a lot to play for, because LAFC just needs to match Seattle's result to finish top two, which would have an effect. For example, you'd avoid. If you drop to third or fourth, you could have, it basically could affect your playoff route. So LA has a lot to play for, but like we mentioned, the Whitecaps need two of the three. One is for Seattle to lose. So if that happens, they would just need one of the other two. And the other two is RSL dropping points to Colorado, and it's Houston dropping points to Portland. For what it's worth, Portland in great form. They went from out of the playoffs, that fired Savarese. They've been red hot lately. So the Portland Houston one could do the Whitecaps a favor. If not, don't sleep on Colorado either. It is at home, the altitude. Colorado has some pride. That is a Rocky Mountain Cup game. RSL's already claimed the Rocky Mountain Cup this year. It's, of course, their version of Cascadia Cup. But for Colorado, they've really struggled in that derby over the last few years. So maybe a win to kind of end off the season could really be huge for them. So we'll see if they're able to pull it off. And then, of course, Seattle-St. Louis, Seattle needs to win and hope LAFC drops points. So they'll be going for it. So that's going to be a tough one to bank on. But like you mentioned, St. Louis at home for the final time before, hosting the opener of their playoff game against the eighth or ninth seed. They're going to want to go into that strong. So yeah, it should be fun. I think just keeping an eye on all of those permutations. That's what decision day is, is about. And ultimately that the Whitecaps have a chance at top four is good, because I think that would help them immensely in the just being able to potentially have that extra home game in the first round in a best of three, say they need to. I think would go a long way towards them being potentially able to advance to that next round. And, you know, even if you're lucky to on the next round, you could end up hosting that, because it's single elimination after that if you're top four. Whereas if you finish fifth or sixth, you're going to need an upset to think about hosting a game in the next round. So yeah, overall, it's a huge weekend for the Whitecaps. And I mean, yeah, just take care of business against LAFC. That's all you can really control. And it's going to be interesting. My goodness, it's what, like the fifth time they've played them this year or something like that. So it's always tough to play a team as many times as the Whitecaps have had. But it's still a good chance for revenge after however many times it has been.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at least LAFC is not going to get the tactical drop on Vancouver at this point. These are two teams that know a good amount about each other, lots of experience. So it'll really just come down to the performances on the day. I mean, speaking of LAFC, let's dive a little bit into them. We've obviously probably previewed them three or four times this season, so not a ton of new ground to cover, but we can talk a little bit about recent form. And that recent form, at least the last two matches, is very good. A 5-1 win over Minnesota, and then most recently a 4-2 win over Austin FC. So 9 goals combined in their last two matches. Denny Bouanga and Brian White were once toe-to-toe in the Golden Boot race, but Bouanga, as he's proven this season, when he is red hot, he piles in goals. A streaky scorer, if there ever was one. And I mean, really, that's the main threat for LAFC, right? Is that, you know, Bonga's has 19 goals this season in MLS play. That is formidable and sort of overshadows what I think is maybe not massive Carlos Vela numbers, but just a very quiet 9 goals, 7 assists in MLS play. Still a rock solid season, and he's been playing a little bit more distributor this season at times, but a very clinical and dynamic attacking duo when those guys are on. And then obviously, you know, a lot of depth, a lot of veteran presence throughout the rest of the roster for Vancouver to contend with. Now, you know, I think I do like this matchup more with Vancouver on the front foot at home with the momentum behind them on decision day. I feel like that kind of, that's obviously a nice boost for Vancouver when they've had to go on the road in LA. It's been difficult. And, you know, when they've had success on the road in LA, it's because they've had to go really aggressive with their game plan and do something out of the ordinary, which, not discrediting their ability to do that, because obviously they did have a really good performance down in LA, but it requires something more beyond the scope of what's normal for this team. Whereas I think playing at home, they can play their game and you know, ultimately I think trade chances with the best of them in MLS, especially given the recent defensive showings, which have been a little bit better. So it'll be an interesting one. Obviously Vancouver, you know, as you mentioned, Alex, they'd probably prefer if LAFC was locked into that second spot and had nothing to play for, that would have been helpful. But this is an LA team that will undoubtedly be pushing to make sure that no matter what Seattle does, Seattle can't catch them on decision day.
Oh, exactly. And yeah, it's interesting, this LAFC team, because they're so deep. They're incredibly deep. And for them, it just feels like they really got a lot taken out of them by that Champions League. I'll say Champions League, because that's what it was at the time, run. They just fell short against Leon, but to their credit, I mean, many teams have fallen where they have and didn't even make the playoffs. So the fact that they could easily finish second by their own, you know, control in their last match day It's also a bit of an indictment of how competitive it's been in the West. And, you know, maybe in a different season, LAFC would be a bit lower, you know, just because they do have 51 points, which I think just for comparison last year, if I'm not mistaken, 51 points has them fourth. Okay, maybe not much of a difference, just because the West has been more even and competitive this year. But still, I think a hat tip has to be given to them for handling the Champions League run, handling, you know, League's Cup, handling all of that, and still, you know, finishing where they are now. But it's that talent. It's that depth. I mean, Bouanga is a key example. He's having a ridiculous season, 32 goals and 15 assists in all competitions. Like, what's that, 47 goal contributions? You know, 19 and 7 in MLS play, he has in terms of goals and assists. He had 7 and 4 on their Champions League run, 6 and 3 in just 3 League Cups game. Like you mentioned, when it's been hot, it's been red hot. Funnily enough, fun stat though, I just was very curious about this because Brian White, he has 19 goals in all competitions, which is very good. If you can hit that 20 mark, I think that's always a good season for a striker, especially one who doesn't have a DP tag. Fun fact, Dennis Bouanga has scored his 32 goals across 19 games this season. Brian White has scored his 19 goals across 18 games. Just all that to say is that Bouanga is also one of the, you know, he's a striker. He gets one, he wants two and three. I've just been very impressed by White, the ability that he has to score a lot in games, which, you know, it can be hard for a striker to have that consistency that, hey, I mean, 18 games, like I think it is, White's played how many this year? White's played 40. That's almost half of the games he's scoring a goal in, you know, whereas Bouanga scored 19 of the 43. That's what, almost 20 plus games he hasn't scored a goal in. You know, not to compare the two, I just find that interesting as well about Bouanga. Like you mentioned, it rains, it pours. Like I think about that first leg LAFC Whitecaps Champions League tie where Bouanga scored, I think it was a brace and it was a dominant performance. That's what he does. But also there's been games where Bouanga can go quiet. So for the Whitecaps, keep an eye on Bouanga. Hope, make sure it's one of those quiet games. As for Vela, I mean, it's just like I mentioned, credit to this 34 goal plus seasons he's had in the past where you look at a 9-7 season, which is very solid by most metrics for a winger, and be like, oh, okay, quiet season for Vela. But yeah, that's also just this LAFC team. They've got the pieces across the board. I think it's been no coincidence as well. Maxime Crepeau is back and healthy, and they've really found their feet as of late just because he helps them play the way they want to. And keep an eye on him because, you know, Crepeau, after how things have ended with the Whitecaps, he's going to want a clean sheet to mess with the Whitecaps playoff hopes or, you know, something like that to get one back on the fans. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Crepeau holds, as it feels like LAFC's found a bit of stability in front of him as well, which has helped. Hollingshead's played a lot. Palacios at fullback, they found some stability. Chiellini started a lot. Aaron Long, like it feels like they've got a settled back four and keeper, which has helped them because I know earlier in the year they were struggling with center back injuries and whatnot.
Alex, you could not have transitioned any better into my next point, which is, we just wax poetic about Bouanga and Vela and the goals and the offense. This is the sixth best team in MLS in terms of expected goals against. Massively underrated. I mean, they had John McCarthy start the majority of the season. He doesn't have gaudy post-shot expected goals goalkeeping numbers. It's very much average. So those expected goals figures are earned. You know, they've been putting in the work defensively. Those veterans like Hollingshead, you mentioned, Palacios, you know, younger guy, just 24, has been really, really good. And now Max Crepeau, who I think, you know, when at his best is obviously an upgrade over McCarthy, and not just stylistically, but probably in terms of shot stopping, if he can provide a bit of a boost, this has the potential to be a relatively elite defensive group, you know, at least by a high scoring MLS team standards. You know, they're not trying to be prime Nashville SC where they're shutting things down and winning everything 1-0. They still like to score goals, but they're very competent defensively at a, you know, at a high level. And I think that's worth shouting out as well. And, you know, kind of a model for the Vancouver Whitecaps to emulate, right? It's about that, the thing I've talked about a bunch of times in the show, which is you have that top of the league, chance creation. All you need to do is be average, slightly above average defensively, and you can look like a real juggernaut. And this is a this is an LAFC team that's been just a bit above average defensively. But when you do so much at the other end of the pitch, it looks really good. And it also makes, when you score that many goals, it makes your life a little bit easier defensively if you have the players to enact the system and get it done.
Yeah, it's fascinating because the underlying numbers, like you mentioned, I think there's a reason LAFC leads the league in expected goal differential, slightly ahead of Cincinnati and Columbus. Whitecaps remain fifth in expected goal differential. It'll be interesting to see. I bet they'd be able to leapfrog a New York Red Bulls depending on what happens and finish top four. That's wild, by the way, for the Whitecaps to be that in those sorts of realms and expected goal difference. Usually it's mid to low table. The Whitecaps have been, this one's a fun one for things to watch. The Whitecaps have dropped to third in expected goals four behind Cincinnati and Columbus. By the way, side note, what the heck's going on in Ohio with these teams being able to generate chances by the boatload? And please give me a hell is a real derby game in the playoffs. But yeah, the Whitecaps, funnily enough, they've dropped, but they're only 0.17 XG behind both of Cincinnati and Columbus, who are tied. So the Whitecaps could finish the season on top of the expected goals for LAFC's fifth. But where LAFC has the edge, of course, is that LAFC, like you mentioned, are fifth in XG against. Whitecaps, though, want to give a quick shout out. They're up to 10th in expected goals against. At one point, they dropped almost into the, I think, near 20. So they've climbed up into the top 10 of XG against. So it shows defensively they have found their feet later. You can see this 3-5-2 also playing on the front foot helps when you're attacking more. There's less chances. I think that's also been worth noting because this has come over the last like 10 games, which have mostly been on the road. So like the Whitecaps have quietly put together a good defensive stretch. Like I bet you, if you do over the, you know, since August, the numbers probably show very well. And for fun, I will do that, but, I'll look, but yeah, just interesting that this matchup, like you mentioned, the advanced numbers of how good this LAFC team continues to be. And that's scary heading in the playoffs. Cause yeah, this is the defending supporter or the defending treble winners last year, I guess you can say, or double winners, pardon me, in the MLS Cup and Supporter Shield, which we know how hard that is to do. Not many teams are able to do that. And based on their underlying numbers, based on the fact that a lot of their stars are in form, it's going to be hard to bet on them, bet on anyone but them this year. Because St. Louis, fun story, they have a lot of work to do to overcome their underlying numbers. And as we've seen with path teams, that's hard to do in the playoffs. Playoffs is where that stuff tends to catch up to you. And that's good news for the Whitecaps that they're doing a lot of the right things, fifth in expected goal differential, because that sort of stuff will come back to help you in the playoffs, like I mentioned, or hurt you. So in the West, teams like LAFC, Whitecaps, this might be well to put out, but based on some of the form of teams around them, it's probably LAFC, it's probably Seattle, it's probably Vancouver could be three of your favorites to finish in that conference final game, which is wild to put out there.
Yeah, very interesting. Certainly, yeah, if you're a slave to the XG gods, that certainly is the way things could be lining up. And while XG, you know, some of these outlier teams like in Austin, sometimes it's difficult to replicate that in the playoffs. Also, sometimes the playoffs completely defy logic and it's just a team that gets hot at the right time, right? Like you can see it go both ways, which is very interesting. Alex, for this one, LAFC on decision day, predictions, what are we thinking? Here's my thought process. As much as, yes, this match matters to LAFC, I think there's almost a bit of a, you know, depending on how many viewers watch the NFL, but there's almost like a bit of a Kansas City Chiefs-esque vibe to this LAFC group where they tend to take their foot off the gas sometimes. Like, this is a team that can really turn things on. And I just wonder, you know, as much as this match matters, it probably doesn't matter as much to LA as it does to Vancouver. Vancouver at home, they're in good form at the moment. So I think I have to take them in a close one. 2-1 Vancouver Whitecaps on decision day. And heck, why not? Let's say that the Seattle result and the Houston result both go the Whitecaps way and that they're able to sneak into that top four and maybe go on a bit of a playoff run as you just talked about.
You're not betting on Brian White scoring 5 goals and passing Denny Bouanga to win the golden boot at the last game.
Not quite. I'm not willing to be that bold.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, hey, just worth noting that White needs four to tie Buonga. Don't think that's happening, but he needs at least one to tie Lucho Acosta. Of course, we have to see what Acosta has up his sleeve in the last game. So there's a chance White finishes top two in the Golden Boot. And, you know, it was reported by Manuel Veth that he probably that he has a bonus in his contract for Golden Boot, which looks like he won't trigger. Although I wonder if he'll give Ryan Gold some stick for not giving him some more penalties to get closer to winning that Golden Boot. But hey, I'm sure there's also probably a bonus for finishing top two. Anyways, all this to say, I'm going to go 1-1. And this is, I'm going to explain why I think that is. And why I think the Whitecaps are going to want to avoid this result. It's worth noting that for whatever reason, the Whitecaps have typically struggled when the attention is on them. And I think the attention's on them right now. Yeah, the Lions are in great form and look likely to make a good playoff run.
Other than Canadian Championship the last 2 years, where for some reason they've been able to overcome it.
Yeah, and this Montreal game is proof of what I want to see more of, because the Canadian Championship this year, Montreal, they play well, they win, they play dominant football and win. That was a rarity, because even you can use the Tigres game as an example. Play fantastically and you end up losing on penalties. Yes, while it was a great moral victory, if you have that result in the playoffs in a best of three game, that's still a loss. That's a, you know, you could have the best performance and you end up drawing. It was just basically all that to say there's so many examples of, other than the 2017 home playoff game against the Earthquakes, feels like every time the Whitecaps have a huge game at home where fans come in, you know, I think Decision Day in 2021, even where they drew against Seattle and Max Crepo had to save the ball with his face just to get into the playoffs. Think of some of the other playoff home games they've had since, like, or not since, but 2017, Seattle. Great chance to you know, one of the best Whitecaps teams, and they fall flat. It was a 0-0 draw or whatever, 1-0 loss. Portland at home in 2015, sold out lower bowl, white shirts everywhere, and you end up losing. Basically all this to say, even past Canadian Championship finals, the Whitecaps have kind of struggled when the attention's on them. This is a huge chance, because like they mentioned, the Lions are in good form and could make a Grey Cup run. That would certainly take a lot of attention given the great things they're doing. But it's the start of the Canucks season. The Canucks are doing great, by the way. We'll see if that ends up keeping up. But this feels like people are starting to talk about the Whitecaps. People kind of actually started to hear about this Gold MVP campaign. Like, oh, wait, the Whitecaps have someone pushing MVP. Oh, Brian White's scoring a lot of goals. There's, you know, Golden Boot. Oh, there's a couple Canadian players that are representing their country. So they have the attention on. And I think as we've heard, it's around 20,000 tickets have already been sold for this LAFC game. So there's going to be a good crowd. That's why I'm predicting 1-1, just because historically that's the sort of game they play to this sort of crowd. But all this, I'm saying this is a good challenge for them to overcome that, get a win against LFC, send the crowd home happy, because you have to remember, you have a home playoff game coming up. If you can impress, if you can even book top four in that second home playoff game that could come with it, if depending on your performances, I think that could go a long way towards really building some momentum for the playoffs. So that's why I say, I see a 1-1 draw, but I would like to be proven wrong purely because of those things I've mentioned, because I feel like a 1-1 draw would be so typical Capsy, as they say. And I think this Caps team, as we've seen with their underlying numbers, with their Canadian Championship performance, some of their other performances, they've been a team that's been slowly shedding that label. And this is a good chance for them to take a step like that ahead of the playoffs.
That's the thing for me, right? Is that, yeah, certainly there's part of me in my mind that goes, oh, something's going to go against them on decision day. A bad moment, a defensive lapse, an error. But if this team is different, and they've shown that in moments the last calendar year or so, now is the time to demonstrate that. So might as well have a little fun. I can't believe I'm on the optimistic side of this prediction, but I like it. I'll be very happy if I'm proven right. And you know, either way, really, we're going to have multiple matches of entertaining football upcoming here with Vancouver Whitecaps and a couple big home matchups. So that's tremendous. I'm very much looking forward to this weekend. Decision day should be fun all around in MLS. Okay, Alex, any final thoughts from Major League Soccer before we dive into the CPL playoffs?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Again, it shows what's at stake, and I'm excited. And It's also hilariously annoying that we had to wait a few weeks for this decision day to come. But for what it's worth, I do think it's also better that it's not like past years where it's decision day and then international break. And then it's like, oh, wait, there's playoffs on. So I guess it's kind of pick your poison. But yeah, let's dive in the CPL playoffs because, hey, as we talk about what playoff soccer could look like for the MLS team in BC, it's worth noting that one of the CPL teams in BC has been enjoying playoff soccer. And I mean, again, we've it's been interesting to see this new format in action. Like we've mentioned, it helped a lot in the regular season, but also, of course, playoffs are always supposed to be memorable. For what it's worth, I mean, I think it's hard to have a bad playoff format. It's what I've joked about the MLS system. I said, I mean, these playoffs are going to be fantastic. Don't get me wrong. All the teams at stake, I just think it's way too many teams and it devalues the regular season, but it's still going to be fun. Certainly these CPL playoffs have been fun. And yeah, I mean, it started with the 4v5 Pacific versus York. Pacific claimed a 1-0 win at home despite losing their last three heading into the playoffs. They hold off a resurgent York side. They go to Halifax in the 4v5 versus third game. They snatch a win against a very good Halifax side on the day. All of a sudden, that Pacific are in a semifinal. Meanwhile, on the other side of the bracket, Cavalry forge the 1v2, chance to host the final. Cavalry gets upset despite going undefeated in 9 before the playoffs, winning 5 straight. Forge just continues to have their player number in the playoffs, have beat them 5 times now in the playoffs, only drawn them once, never lost to Cavalry in the playoffs. Forge will host the 2023 CPL final. Meanwhile, that means Cavalry, with the new playoff system, the Page playoff system, they drop down to play Pacific in the other semifinal. But as virtue of being the top team in the regular season, they get a host the semifinal. So lots going on, but it's been quite the start.
Yeah, two very interesting matches. I mean, man, Pacific, you know, I have to give a massive shout out and credit to the grit and the determination that James Merriman's side has shown, because they were so far out of form coming into the playoffs. It seemed like the team was disgruntled. The team wasn't comfortable with each other. They couldn't find the right combinations on the pitch. They would play good football at times, but they couldn't produce the goals to match it. It just felt like a prototypical example of a team with lots of talent that ultimately kind of couldn't put all the pieces together at the right time. And while they maybe still haven't put all the pieces together, they've found a way to create two results when they needed them most. And this could be the kind of moment that really galvanizes a team against odds and propels them on a real playoff run here. And I mean, could be massively memorable if they're able to win 4 matches and secure the CPL playoff title. That would be huge. Obviously, they have a long way to go at this point to make that a reality. But I guess looking at the two performances themselves, obviously, you know, late match heroics for Pacific against York. I thought that York coming in, being the road team, just the up and down year they've dealt with, the injuries they had in that match. I mean, they weren't playing at 100%, and that they were able to take Pacific that deep, and they were so close to a result to pushing it to extra time. I mean, they conceded the goal, and then, I mean, it was offside, but they almost scored an absolute banger in extra time as well on the Paris G bicycle kick, which would have been insane. So yeah, huge credit to York for, first of all, getting into the playoffs and then putting up a really good showing against, I think they're severely outmatched by Pacific, but they gave them a real battle. And then, yeah, I feel bad for the Wanderers at home with that crowd behind them, really putting in a pretty solid performance. I mean, Pacific with a very interesting setup. They just decided to sort of forget the midfield and throw a bunch of attackers on the pitch at the same time, which didn't really create a lot of chances in a strange way. I think they only had one shot in target the entire match. And yet somehow through an own goal, through a bit of CONCACAF dark arts inside the final 15 minutes, they're just able to find a way to get it done. Pacific snake bit on the day, couldn't find a goal when they really needed one. And so the Wanderers out of the playoff picture, and now a matchup that, Alex, I feel like we've seen 100 times already this season, Pacific and Cavalry once more. We wanted the mean everything match on decision day. It didn't happen. Now we get it in the playoffs. I'm sure this is, I mean, to be honest, Alex, what's so funny about this is not where Pacific wanted to be. This is not where Cavalry wanted to be. These are both teams that thought they were the best team in the Canadian Premier League this season. And now they're playing for a chance to go against, the old bully of the playground who just continues to sort of lord over them in Forge. So, things only get more challenging for Pacific, another hostile environment for a road matchup. It's weird at this point. I mean, I don't know about your thoughts, Alex, but if you're Cavalry, what is your psyche? What is your mentality like at this point? Because normally you lose a playoff match and that's it. You're packing up your bags. You're going home. The season is over. And yet they still have every chance to win this thing. But how do you reset and refocus after taking a, I don't want to say humiliating result, but I think it's just to have that happen again against Forge had to be pretty demoralizing when you felt so confident about yourself going into that matchup. A real, differing in momentums at the moment between these two teams. And I can be honest, I think it'll be whoever comes out of this semifinal, it's going to be a challenge to go win in Hamilton now. That's maybe not the exciting result for a CPL neutral, but Forge firmly in the driver's seat, not only because they won that 1-2 semi, but also just based on kind of the emotional trajectories these teams are on at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, to Forge, I mean, it's the big game Forge. That's been the impressive thing. Like, this is a team that has made the semifinals of a CONCACAF league. It's made the semifinals of a Canadian championship. They've qualified for a CONCACAF Champions Cup before, became the first CPL team to do so. And now in the playoffs, I mean, it's 5 finals out of 5. It's 3 titles out of 4 so far. Playoff titles, of course. They have a regular season title thrown in there for good measure. They've, consistently been one of the top teams. I think pretty much every year they've finished at least no lower than 3rd. But actually, no, they've always finished at least 2nd because they finished 2nd in first year. I mean, Island Games, hard to really count, but I still think they finished 2nd. Well, they had to because they made the final. Third in 2021, they won the league. Funnily enough, the only year they didn't win the playoffs. Then in 2020, last year, they finished 2nd. And then this year, they finished 2nd. So it's just been, consistency from Forge. But for Calvary, it's been funny because they've been the more consistent team across the regular season, which you can argue is harder to do. It's hard to be successful across so many regular season games. And Calvary's finished 1st 3 different times. Twice they were finished 1st the year they then in 2021, they tied for 1st with Forge. Forge, of course, won on tiebreaker. But if you're going by points, Calvary finished tied for 1st, which is an achievement. Yet when it comes to playoffs, they've never won a knockout playoff game. And even if you include the Island Games, which of course there was the 3-game group stage playoff, Cavalry only won one of those as well. So technically Cavalry's only won one playoff game in their history and only one knockout playoff game in their, or none, 0 knockout games in their history. Forge has only lost one, and it was the final of 2021 when Pacific came in and caught them by surprise. I just find that contrast interesting because at the end of the day, playoffs, it's what you can get judged on. It's those cup games. It's those one-off moments. It's the where the lights shine brightest, the big players show up. And it's just been fascinating to see that contrast between Forge and Cavalry, who in the regular season are always so close, and Cavalry's had the edge in the regular season. So all that to say, I mean, for Forge, credit to them for making a 5th final, and certainly would hard to bet against them, especially that they're going to be thinking the only time they ever had a chance to win a trophy on home field, on their home turf, Pacific came in and stole it. So they're thinking about that in the back of their mind, be like, we want to be the first CPL team to win the North Star Cup as it is now on home field. So I'd bet against them, but it's interesting the narratives for Pacific and Cavalry, because for Cavalry, it's win that first knockout playoff game. Because if not, this could be legacy defining if they lose, to think, okay, this team has been so dominant in the regular season. Out of the four full seasons, you've finished first three times, yet you haven't won a single playoff game in any of those years. That's era defining. That's something where, you know, that defines a whole 5-year tenure of a team. Whereas if they can win now, go win that double in Hamilton, it would almost be more impressive. Because I think it's almost fitting it's laid out like this, because I've always said it feels like if Cavalry's going to win the playoffs, it's going to have to go through Forge in some way anyway. So it'd be almost fitting that they go through them twice and one of them was a loss just to reset the morale. But then on Pacific side, it's kind of funny. I don't know if how, you know, a bit of deja vu. Pacific in 2021 went to Calgary, won a semifinal, went to Hamilton, won a final. What do they have to do to win a second playoff trophy? Go to Calgary and win a semifinal, go to Hamilton and win a playoff. So Pacific's been here before. For whatever reason, they seem to just show up in these sorts of knockout games. They've had a history. They've made it to the semifinals of a Canadian championship, lost by one goal against a, you know, decent TFC team at this time, even though they end up finishing near the bottom of the table. They were, you know, it was still a decent TFC outfit. You know, in CONCACAF League last year, they made a good run. They only lost on penalties. This is a Pacific team that does well in knockout games. So for them, this could be a chance to as well. Two titles in four full seasons if they get a win over, across the line, which is pretty impressive for Pacific. So I love the storylines either of the way, because yeah, they got Forge's dominance, which, hey, might not be fun for all the fans, but it's, you know, from a league perspective, leagues are like that around the world. And it gives you certainly a standard and a bar to chase. Or it's Cavalry's redemption, which is a fun story after the season they've had. Or it's Pacific showing that as well. They can show up in big moments, which is impressive because they've been so all in on the play the kids since day one. So the fact that they could already have two titles under their belt while being that sort of team is also incredibly impressive. And then, of course, there's the Champions League spot in all of this that we can't forget.
Exactly. And I mean, yeah, Pacific, if they're able to pull this off, being Forge's kryptonite in the CPL, really, right? Where you have sort of the big dog, and then you have the one team that has found a way to vanquish them. So, man, going to be tons of fun. I'm very much looking forward to it. Been entertaining so far. I mean, yeah, maybe those first two matches, not like the peak ideal of what football should be, but, you know, rarely in elimination rounds is that what you get. So, I think just, you know, it's interesting. We'll see when we get through these next two matches how we feel about the playoff format in totality. But as you said, Alex, I think, you know, it's almost kind of hard to mess up, because playoff football knockout rounds are incredibly exciting no matter how you construe them.
No, and that's exactly it. And ultimately, I think I've liked the idea of just rewarding the regular season performances. I'd say the only thing I've seen that's been pointed out that I think is fair is the harshness of 1v2 right off the bat. But at the same time, the fact that you get a second chance, I think that's also, you know, more than fair as well, because it is a good point that in the past, sometimes you get 1v4 and that's a way bigger advantage to host a final versus 1v2, but also it's 1v4 with no lifeline. So I don't know. I think it kind of, you can, there's arguments to be had either way, but I think overall, you know, Cavalry as well, it's that chance at redemption could also be a fun storyline to think that, especially for Forge, they squeak their way into the second place, literally get in on the most obscure of tiebreakers just to make the final. Like, it shows for Cavalry, okay, we need to make the most of the second chance that they have. So no, I think it's going to be interesting, and playoff football is playoff football. And so far, I mean, I think it's been a good start, especially like for Pacific as well. I like that as the fourth, fifth place team, whoever was going to win that game on the island had to travel to Halifax on short notice. Yes, it's, you know, wild and chaotic. They had to travel like 4,000 plus kilometers in less than 72 hours. But it also adds to the legend of Pacific winning despite that travel and that journey and everything like that. And it kind of punished them for not finishing in the top three, that it could have been Halifax hosting that game on the 4v5 and then having to travel to Pacific if Pacific finished third, and all those little things, I think overall have, you know, paid off, and it's also, it's made for these interesting start to the playoffs.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about the potential harshness of the 1-2 matchup is that, yes, that, you know, in isolation, that one match, that feels tough, but then all you have to do in big air quotes, but you have to beat a team, the 3-5 seed, for a chance to, if you level the playoff matchup with the second seed, you get the tiebreaker, right? That's basically how it is, right? If you're able to, if Cavalry is able to level the playoff series with Forge, they're the top seed. They hold the tiebreaker. They can win the championship. I think what's maybe would have been a little bit more questionable is Forge plays the 1-2 matchup, loses, beats the lower seed, gets into the final, beats the one seed, is the playoff champion. That to me is maybe a little more, you can question the whether you're rewarding the one seed enough, right? Because you do lose twice to the second seed, but both playoff matches would have been against the next seed in the league. So I feel like that's where maybe you can question the, you know, how much of a priority, how much of a benefit you're handing out for that one seed. But I feel like the way it's fallen for Cavalry in this instance, you know, their fate's still in their hands. Go level the series with Forge if you can. And if you're able to do that, you do the double in the Canadian Premier League.
Well, I guess you can even argue, I mean, the first seed, of course, you get the reward of a trophy and a Champions League spot. But also as well, like if you're the one seed and you're in a scenario where you win the first game and you play a final, you're going to be so extremely rested compared to the other teams, but not like too rested. If you're losing that final at home, having not had to travel, whereas your opponent, say Forge, say in this scenario, Forge had lost and then they had to go all the way back to Hamilton to host a semifinal against Pacific and then go all the way back to Calgary again and win. Like, it's almost like, okay, fair play to Forge for, like, you know, you tip your hat versus Cavalry being like, okay, you had that chance to host both of your playoff games, not move. You finished your top seed. You had that extra rest, whereas teams like Pacific were Wednesday, Saturday, are like on the road. So I don't know. There's, you know, again, like you mentioned, pluses and negatives to both, right? So it's kind of pick your choice. And like you mentioned, it'll be poetic in this way if Cavalry goes out and wins on the road, especially if it would, you know, either way, it's going to be interesting as well. Like I mentioned, like the fact that no team has won at home yet. Like, yeah, there's all those storylines and we'll see how it unfolds.
All right. Well, yeah, very much looking forward to the Canadian Premier League final couple matches of the playoffs, as well as decision day in MLS and the playoffs upcoming. Certainly we'll be back with more coverage, both in written and podcast form, of all of that good stuff. Alex, any final thoughts, concluding notes here before we sign off?
Well, I just say thanks for everyone for listening to episode 182 of the show. I'm excited to be back to continue to talk CPL playoffs, keep talking about the MLS playoffs, just all the playoffs, especially that there's some good BC involvement in playoffs this year. That hasn't always been the case, across the last few seasons. So that'll be nice. And yeah, looking forward to heading out to the LAFC game on decision day to see how that cracks up. And then of course the home playoff games afterwards. But, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gungaruzic, on Instagram Threads at Adrian the Case, and excited to be back for episode 183 very soon.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. You can find us on social, on Google, on the web, at the third sub. Just check out the website, you know, engage with us on social. Listen to the podcast, read an article, all that good stuff, especially as we're heading into the business portion of the North American soccer calendar. Lots of good storylines to follow, and we'll be with you every step of the way. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.